Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. It's Tuesday, July 28th, 2015. We've got some special guests today to talk about cask ales. And what about cask ales, man? We got Ben Keen from Beer Advocate Magazine.
What's up,
my
Jimmy?
My summer sidekick. How are you, man?
I'm doing great.
You know what's wild is that I'm drinking this this cask ale that our good buddy Alex Hall brought, who we know from Gotham Imbiber, and I think for years we call him the American cask beer like advocate. He's been, you know, advocating for cask beers ever since I met him, and he brought along Jason Hicks, who's the chef owner of the Shakespeare and Joneswood Foundry, two places in Manhattan, and our good buddy Davey Lopez from Gun Hill's here today too. So got quite a group, but you know, Alex, you poured this in my glass, and I was expecting something like kind of fizzy and, you know, carbonated. But what is this? Is it a cask ale?
That's most certainly a cask ale. That is actually unusual because it's a cask lager. It's brewed at the Keg and Lantern Brew Pub in Greenpoint. It's called Grassroots India Pale Lager, 5.9%. It's a little bit cloudy, which a lot of people, especially from the UK, would not expect from a cask beer. However, it is unfiltered. It's an unfiltered cask lager, and it tastes absolutely awesome.
It's truly unusual, an unfiltered cask lager.
It's kind of brilliant. And one thing we're going to talk today is about not just cask ales, but about the cask mark from UK that you guys have helped bring to the States. So Ben, to start off, what do you know about cask ale in America, and do you know much about the cask mark? Is it called the Cask Mark Trust? Yes.
The Cask Mark Trust is the organization that runs the Cask Mark Quality Accreditation Scheme. It's UK-based. It's very fledgling still in the US. It's only in the New York City metropolitan area and eastern Pennsylvania so far. Possibly in Chicago in the future, but we're still working on that.
Yeah, I think for whatever reason, and I don't know the answer, cask ales just haven't caught on and don't have quite the popularity that they do in the UK, in spite of the fact of people like Alex, who are really trying to educate and advocate and spread the word about it. I don't know what is the barrier, but I feel like American beer drinkers, I don't know if there's something they don't quite understand or an appreciation they haven't yet gained, but it's not on par with the respect and appreciation that it has in the UK.
I don't know what it is either. I know, for example, when we were starting out, we met Alex multiple times, and every time he would say, "Let me know as soon as you guys are going to start doing casks because I want to be involved." We, for whatever reason, it just was one of those things where we said we want to do it down the line, but it wasn't in the forefront. But I know that every bar that we've talked to, they said, as soon as you guys start casking, send us over the firkins because we want them. And actually, we, as I just told Alex before, we just got our first batch of firkins in a couple weeks ago. So we're going to start casking.
That's now. Great. So let's talk. Jason, tell us about what you're doing because you're from England. And
yeah.
Yeah, you're here because you've got a cask mark at your two places, the Shakespeare and Joneswood Foundry.
Yeah. Well, I'm a chef by trade. I opened a restaurant called Joneswood Foundry about 6 years ago. First call I made was to this fine chappy next to me, Alex. Told him I wanted to do cask, and I wanted to bring the tradition of drinking beer, session ale, being operative word being session ale. And I think that, and then we've been 6 years now. The cask is representing a huge part of our beer sales. And about 2 years ago, or 18 months ago, I opened up the Shakespeare, where I've got three cask lineups plus 18 other lines. We focus on British beer, but we don't just have British beer. But we don't have the Bud Lights and all the rest of it. But we have what we think is a good a good substitute, let's say. But I think to your point was the how the casting come on is more it has a lot. I wouldn't say more, but it has a lot to do with the culture of drinking. So in the UK, I'm brought up with drinking pints of beer, pints and pints of beer, and walking out of the pub as opposed to stumbling out of the pub. So I think that, you know, it's like a we always try to keep our cask as much as possible. I brought them with me. We have a Joneswood IPA, which is by Wandering Star, and I have a Shakespeare Pale Ale by Heavy Seas, and we stick around 4.5%. We try not to go above that as much as possible, so people can have a couple of beers and enjoy it.
But you're seeing people buying that, and you're moving that product at a pace that you're happy with. It isn't like,
yeah. Well, I'll give you a stat that I've just got from Joneswood on 76th Street. So, you know, very much Upper East Side. It's not like my other place down in Midtown. So I've been tracking the beer purchasing as opposed to sales, and 14% of my beer purchasing was represented by cask ale just in the last 3 weeks. So this would be history, you know, really when I'd struggle to sell it because of that tepid beer that they really don't like. But once you get people accustomed to it, they enjoy it, they appreciate it, they can actually taste flavor profiles in it.
You guys tell us more about the beer culture in Britain, and you know, why is it that you guys like cask ale so much? Because it's so different than what I'm used to drinking.
Cask beer never went extinct in the UK, thanks to the devotion of the consumer movement called CAMRA, Campaign for Real Ale, which was founded in 1971, because so many people were disgusted at the larger brewers throwing out traditional cask beer and putting in insipid keg beers, like bland and fizzy, and chilled down, and just totally inferior in all respects. So it was the only place in the world that it never went extinct. In the US, it's a much more an uphill struggle because it did go extinct. Obviously, Prohibition and the big brewery mergers after Prohibition, everybody was just concerned with quantity rather than quality.
I mean, before Prohibition, was cask ale part of the American beer scene?
Yes, it would have been before the invention and widespread use of pressurized kegs and refrigerated cellars.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, for me, is more about the craft of keeping a bar, keeping a cellar, keeping a bar.
I actually have a question for you. Do you notice a difference in the demographic of who's purchasing cask ales at your bars?
Yes and no. Up on the Upper East Side, it's at Joneswood, our business model is based on, we don't really care. Uh-huh. We only focus on a 4-block radius of the front door. We want to make sure everybody gets recognized when they walk through the door. And we just want to sort of strive to be that local place in the true essence of the word, the pub, which is what it's all about. Shakespeare is a completely different kettle of fish. I mean, it's Midtown. It's a heavy expat population there. And what we find is peer pressure is actually, and also the beautiful, elegant sort of three cask lineup with the person pulling the pint, and it's a show. You know what I mean? It's like wow, what is that? So we also serve our cask ale in jugs, as opposed to the regular lineups on the taps being, you know, regular beer pint glasses. So I think that people want to try it. They don't want to say they don't like it because they don't necessarily want to sort of have all these people that are standing there with jugs. What are you talking about?
You know, going back to the 1990s, the place that first turned me on to cask beer was the original DBA in the East Village. Mm-hmm. And it seemed around the late 90s, they always had a lineup of Adnams on these great hand pumps on cask. Tell us about Adnams and some of these great British beers that inspire everybody.
Adnams is one of the great traditional regional breweries in the UK, based in Southwold in East Anglia. So if you're not quite sure where that is, think of London and go northeast to the East Anglian coast. Beautiful old brewery, very, very traditional. I actually have a bottle of Adam's Tally-Ho Extra, which we might crack open in this session if we have time.
Tally-Ho?
Tally-Ho.
Yes, indeed.
You know, we'll ask you questions, but just keep saying some weird English, you know, sayings for us.
E-by-gum. That's up north.
So, Ben, have you done any articles about cask ale?
You know, we have not recently, but we are in the process at Beer Advocate of archiving all of our back issues online. And we just put up the September issue from 2007, which features none other than Mr. Alex Hall. So, yeah, we have touched on it, but it's been a while since we revisited.
Well, cask has evolved a lot, and I think I'm excited to have the show because I remember 8, 9, maybe 10 years ago, a lot of beer bars in New York City were doing casks, and a lot of brewers were just filling up casks with anything. Firkins full of Imperial IPAs. We had one tasting with Otter Creek, which now seems absurd, but it was cool. They had Imperial IPA on draft and Imperial IPA on cask in the same night. And, you know, I was lucky enough to get some of the good English beers that were coming over, like Ridgeway and Coniston, and they were true cask condition. And those stood apart. They would only ship them in the cool weather. They wouldn't ship them in the summer. So I think that people kind of like, at some point, people weren't doing cask the right way in America, and like they had been doing in England. So tell us what the cask mark is and how that is going to help, you know, pubs in America. Yeah. Really educate their customers better.
Well, coming from my perspective, it's I'm a chef by trade, so this for me is the holy grail of recognition for actually honoring the craft and actually keeping up with it. So it would be like getting a Michelin star for me in that regard, because there's people coming in testing the beer, the bartenders. Take a pride in the way that
what,
they...
What are the qualifications to get a cask mark in the United States?
Temperature? Well, why don't you...
Tell us, Alex.
Okay. It's basically, it's every aspect of a high-quality beer. Temperature being the main thing. Clarity, as long as the beer is not unfined and meant to be cloudy or expected to be cloudy. And aroma and flavor. And each of those is awarded points. And the maximum is 20 out of 20, 5 for each category. And the minimum to pass is a 16 out of 20. So it's pretty tough. But it's well worth it for bars to do that, for the plaque, the certificate, and all the publicity online, and all the point of sale material that you get for free for passing it.
It's all about the freebies.
And then what are the places in New York City that have the cask mark? Because we host our own Good Beer Seal Awards, and you know that's what we're trying to recognize, you know, small independently owned craft beer bars in New York City. But who has the cask mark in New York City?
There's currently only 4. There was one. Unfortunately, DBA Brooklyn is no more. So Jason's 2 places, the Shakespeare and Joneswood Foundry. And in Brooklyn, you've got the Keg and Lantern Brew Pub and Lucky Dog in Williamsburg.
All right, man. Well, that's cool. Have you guys been to those places? I mean, I've heard about Keg and Lantern.
I've actually eaten at Joneswood.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, you have?
My wife and I live on the Upper East Side.
Oh, cool.
So
nice to meet.
So what is it? What is Joneswood Foundry for you guys?
We've only been there once, but we talked about going there a long time, and my wife loves trying new restaurants, so we stopped by, went out with a couple of friends, and we were actually very pleasantly surprised. I thought it was much smaller than it was. I didn't realize you had that whole back area, and it was great. We loved our meal there.
Yeah, it's a little
How jam. Many cask beers did you have?
Just one.
And that's your vision, man, Joneswood Foundry.
Yeah.
So it's really, it's just a local place. You'll have a local pub.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm obviously English, but my training is classical French. I've been in New York about 25 years. Chef of some very high profile.
And I see you worked at some great places.
Yeah.
And you work with,
Lagerloo was my big thing. And then sort of for 15 years, I worked for essentially one owner. And that's when I decided to open up Joneswood. But
you worked there with Daniel Boulud's catering. Yeah. Orsay too.
Yeah, that was the same ownership as Lagerloo.
Drew Nieperant's East Hampton place.
That's right. Opened that up. I mean, the whole thing for me was to try to sort of rekindle the things that, you know, I remembered as a kid. And the thing that came to me was, you know, pulling the cask ale and everything else. And that was the essence of Joneswood. And Joneswood's like a really unique place.
All right, man. We're off to a great start. We're talking about cask beer in New York City. Back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Yeah. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the heritageradionetwork.org. Check us out, heritageradionetwork.org. We're going to have a new website coming up soon, and there's always some great ways to support the network, heritageradionetwork.org. So we're in the studio. We got Great American Craft Beer guys. We got Davey Lopez from Gun Hill Brewing in the Bronx and Ben Keane from Beer Advocate. And then we've got the British guys. We've got Jason Hicks from Joneswood Foundry and Alex Hall, who's the Cask Mark guy, a cask advocate over here. So what is this? It's like we're talking like two shows. There's like American beer, you know, and then there's the British thing, and you guys got to convince me, what is it about British beer that I should be drinking cask? Because I know you guys have a different culture, different traditions. I want my IPA, I want my carbonated beer, so why should I drink, you know, flat cask ale?
Jimmy,
it's not flat. If it's flat, it should be sent back to the brewery as ullage, like not saleable. It has a natural, gentle carbonation produced by the actions of the yeast in the secondary fermentation.
It's just so
it's totally, totally wrong to say it's flat. It's flatter, but not flat. So, all right, your original question. As I said earlier, that cask beer was produced here in huge volumes before the invention of the pressurized keg and refrigeration. So it's just going back to our natural roots, in my opinion. Not necessarily in the US. It could be pretty much anywhere in the world that has a tradition of drinking beer.
So how do you cask condition an ale? Because this is what you're talking about, kind of a natural, you know, carbonating as part of this casking process.
Okay, so it mustn't be filtered. And most certainly mustn't be pasteurized, and it should be racked off just before the end of the primary fermentation, quite often by crash cooling what's in the primary fermenter, racking it into casks and priming the casks with some kind of sugar. Quite often it's unfermented wort. Just a little bit, just to get the yeast going enough to do a secondary fermentation in the cask. Put too much in, and you got bad news, because the bungs will blow, because the yeast will work too vigorously.
Let's talk about some of the brewers in New York City that could be making a good cask condition ale. So we know that at Gun Hill now, the brewer, Chris Sheehan, for a long time he worked at Chelsea Brewing, and they were making casks in the city. Do you think that Christian could make a real cask condition ale?
Oh, most certainly. I've tasted his cask beer when he was at Chelsea. Most certainly, yes.
It's a good answer right there.
Yes.
You like that, right?
And then who else in New York area is or could be making a good cask condition ale?
Pretty much most of the brewers. In Brooklyn, have been doing it for a long time. Garrett Oliver is a master at that. And he's very finicky about where he sends his cast to, which I find a good thing, because there's nothing worse than a badly kept cask that will put newcomers off. I'm not going to name any of the other ones, however...
What about the bad ones? You don't want to talk about those?
there aren't really any in the city. I've had bad ones from elsewhere that really shouldn't be doing it, but that's few and far between, thankfully.
Alex, what do you think the potential pitfalls are for people doing cask ales?
Pitfalls, if they don't do it right, they're going to get a bad name. You've got to be on top of it, and the owner or manager of wherever it's being done has got to make sure all their staff are trained on how to look after it. It's got to be nurtured, basically. It's hands-on work, but it's well worth it.
So, you guys were talking earlier about bars that serve cask beer, but we know that there are more and more breweries in the New York City area that have tap rooms. So is there an opportunity there, Dave, or anybody really, for breweries to introduce people to cask beer in their tap rooms? Is that something that people have tried already, or might be a new way to introduce people to this type of beer?
I don't know of anyone that currently has a cask, except for I know Peekskill does upstate. I know they have a cask ale.
Is this brewed in house?
Yeah, I do. Rockaway usually has one. Brooklyn Brewery has one on Fridays. It's kind of hit and miss otherwise. When Chelsea Brewery was open on the west side, it's long gone now. They're reopening in the Bronx as a commercial production brewery. They tried cask, but they were kind of too out of the way for it to shift quick enough. Again, Chris Sheehan from Gun Hill was the person behind that. Rockaway definitely does, and Brooklyn on Fridays, off the top of my head.
What's the next beer that you poured for us, Jason?
I just poured the Shakespeare Pale Ale, which is brewed by Heavy Seas. It's very similar to the Powder Monkey. This is our proprietary beer. Well, I don't want to say proprietary beer. This is our beer at the Shakespeare, our cask. It's about 4.5%, I believe, 4.6%.
That's a nice style of cask beer. I can drink it. It's also cold.
Yeah.
So there's temperature involved, too.
There is, absolutely.
What is cellar temperature?
Well, you know, I want to go back to your original question.
May I have a refill, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to go back to your original question, which was like what's the difference between, you know, the cask ale and what you drink over here? And there isn't truly too much, other than I think that people that are drinking cask ale are really challenging the bartender. I mean, you go and you have like a pint of Boddington's, which would be British beer, or a pint of Bud Light, and what are the chances of you sending that back because it's too cold, it's too warm, it's too cloudy, or whatever? So I think that that there's that kind of interaction with the customer and the bartender. So what we're pouring right now is the pale ale that we're using and at the Shakespeare, and I've got asked for us to taste an IPA, which is by Wandering Star, that is our proprietary beer over at Joneswood. Both the both low AVBs, session ales. You can really have a few pints and control yourself and not get too out of control. And then with the IPA, I find that the traditional American IPA is super hoppy. In the UK, we don't have the IPAs as hoppy as that. I mean, I'm not a beer aficionado, but from my palate, it's not normally as hoppy. So we've dumbed down the hops in this with the recipe. And these are just two fantastic, for me, two fantastic beers that sell like crazy.
All right. And the other beer, Alex, this is the Adams...
Adams Tally Ho Reserve. Sorry, I think I got the name wrong earlier. I think I said extra. This is from 2012. It's bottle conditioned. It's not cask conditioned, but it's pretty much the same thing. So three-year-old barley wine from the UK. And Adams is one of the funders, one of the consortium of regional brewers in the UK that allows Caskmark to operate. Which is a really, really good thing.
Well, hey. And then the your house beer at Shakespeare, so that's from Heavy Seas, right?
Yeah.
So I know that Hugh Sisson from...
Hugh Sisson, he was sort of the originator of beer in Maryland. He had a pub just called Sisson's that was brewing. I believe they were the first in Baltimore. And they've grown and grown and grown. And I think the cool thing about what they're doing is that he really comes from a sort of British brewing tradition, and that informs a lot of their beer recipes there. So that's, I didn't know that they were making beers for
you guys. We did a show a couple of years ago, and he was trying to roll out the Cask program, and it was working with. Tell us who your friends are that are behind Cask Mark in America, because I know that they've created a bunch of portable cask units, and I know Hugh was trying to roll out Heavy Seas casks around the Northeast.
Well, Hugh is all behind Cask, but he's not actually part of Cask Mark in the US. It's Paul Pendyke, who runs UK Brewing Suppliers, which is the main importer of casks and cask equipment from the UK to the US to enable US bars and restaurants to actually have cask, because the equipment, the casks or the taps or anything like that, they're just not made in the US. So everything has to be imported. So it's solely Paul Pendyke who instigated the Cask Mark program in the US, and I'm kind of his sidekick, I suppose, for the New York market. He asked me if I wanted to do this. Absolutely. Just anything to spread a good quality cask. And I emphasize good quality as opposed to just cask, because he is doing it badly is just not good. Do it well or not at all.
Just to interrupt you there, Alex, I think it's worth pointing out how simple and easy it is to absolutely do cask at the bar. So both of my places, my cask is, I have a section on the bar which is free of taps. I have built an ice bin. I keep the firkins vertical. We tap them from the top, and the pool is about maybe 2 feet maximum, 3 feet maximum, and it's just so bloody easy.
You're doing fresh cask beer.
Yeah,
you're not like keeping it with CO2.
No. It's totally fresh. Yeah,
that's what I thought. That was one of my arguments. I felt that for a while cask beer in the States, people were rolling out these contraptions where they were trying to keep their casks for as long as they could, which to me defeated the whole purpose of it.
But that's the challenge, is to get people really digging it so that you can go through it. And if you're not winning them over, change the beer or, you know, stop doing it.
And sometimes we've done things where we just take a pin, which is a smaller cask or the firkin, and just put it on the bar and gravity pull.
Gravity pull, which
How
is good
that
too.
Different from using a hand pump?
Well, you can't really, for me, you can't control the temperatures of the cask. So for us, what we did is we have basically the trough, if you like, that the barrel sits in, and it's in an ice bath. So we can dump the water so there's no ice, and we can control it like that. But we're obviously not going to be able to regulate it like just changing a thermostat, but you get the feel of it. So we'll check if we're opening the... We'll check the beer temperature 2 hours before we open the bar. We've got 2 hour window to realize what we need to do. If we need to ice it, we'll ice it. If we don't, if it's already super cold, we'll know that we ice it in an hour. So.
Yes, Jason's correct. However, I would like to say that we might have to disagree on something. Mm. if a cask is going to last more than around 3 to 4 days, then I do recommend the use of something called a cask breather. A lot of people in camera in the UK don't like that. However, it's been proven in tests that nobody can detect the difference between a cask with a breather or a cask without, unless it's been set out for several days and the one without is turning to vinegar and the one with is not. So there is a device called a cask breather. It's very inexpensive. It inserts CO2 gas into the headspace, but not the beer, which I really like to make like that really strongly. It does not go in the beer. It just goes in the headspace. And you can get over a week out of a cask to double its life. And that might make the difference between having cask beer or not in a bar if it's not going to turn over within 3 to 4 days.
Fair comment. I'll take it.
All right. So if cask...
Are you lost now, Ben?
No, I'm right there with him. But if Cascade
is good, I'm good.
It's partially about sessionability.
That's correct.
Arguably,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Dave, do you feel like that there among American drinkers, there's a desire for lower ABV, more sessionable beers, sort of as a reaction to not that long ago when people wanted the huge hop bombs and the high ABV stuff?
I mean, I think it's very much dependent on the area where you are in the city.
What about the Bronx?
I think in the Bronx it would have to be a low ABV is definitely a positive up there. I think my biggest concern about having a cask ale on tap in the tasting room would just be making sure that we could go through it fast enough.
You know, I'm just saying though, low AVBs is my preference.
No, I understand.
So it's not. But so is high AVBs cask ales.
Totally, yeah. But I think that for us, in order to go through it, we would have to be low.
I totally understand. Yeah.
I think you might need a cask breather.
All right. I'll tell you what, this is amazing. It's American versus British beer here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Right,
all right,
cup.
Cheers. All right. Hey, tell you. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. You know, Ben, it's a few years ago we did a show called In Defense of British Beer with Alex Hall and some other English guys. So it is amazing. Like, we're talking about cask beers. You know, in Germany and Bamberg, they have their gravity cask, super fresh beer. And I do love that in every, country and region, there are these traditions of beer. And I know you've seen it in America, and someone said that if you're making a brewery now in America, you should go with either Belgian, German, or English traditions. And I don't know, what do you guys think, Davey, at Gunhill? And you brought us a beer, too, didn't you?
I did. So what I just poured is our latest beer. It's called Red Coat Resistance. It's a hop-forward American red ale. It's about 5.4% hop with Cascade, Amarillo, and Mosaic hops.
So with the English inspired, but it's still an American beer, and I love American beer, man. I think the whole world does. So, what do you think, Ben? Do you ever feel like you're in the middle?
Cheers,
I mean, you guys mostly cover American breweries in Beer Advocate.
Yeah, I mean, the American beer scene is so vibrant right now and growing. So the Brewers Association says that as of this week, there are 3,700 breweries in the U.S. and another 1,700 in planning. So there's plenty to keep track of. But we do, we have in recent years really tried to at least in some way pay attention to what's going on around the world. Because, yes, you have all these awesome brewing traditions in Europe. And the American scene is on fire right now. But now you're seeing in Asia and in other parts of the world, New Zealand and Australia, for instance, that there is just as much activity going on.
Oh,
too.
Oh yeah, we're meeting a lot of English breweries that are kind of doing American style beers. Beavertown, even Thornbridge. It seems like a lot of these new guys. But let's jump over. Who is helping you with your cask program at your places, Jason? Like, a couple English breweries.
That are
making casts, or
yeah,
so we should know who they are.
Yeah, so I'm really I before I opened the Shakespeare, I did a trip to England and I went and I hung out with the Green King Brewery and Wells and Young's. So I'm very particularly Jim Robinson from Wells and Young's Imperial Stout fame. He's a ledge, and he also lives now in the US, so that helps.
And are they making special casks for you?
They're not making special casks for me. In my naivety, when I opened Joneswood, I went over there again to sort of open up the channels. I ended up coming back working very much with Fuller's, but trying to get what they could. And to this day, I'm still fathomed by why, you know, the UK brewers can't, or the breweries can't, sort of amalgamate the containers and send over a refrigerated container that's packed, as opposed to, no, we don't work together.
Now, I know you also have regular draft lines, and you said you focus on British bitters.
Yeah, on the draft lines, we at the Shakespeare and the Shakespeare, we focus on a lot of Speckled Hen and Green King brews, also Wells and Youngs. We still have Fuller's on tap, but we try to keep within those, and then we keep about five lines open for just up and comers, you know, just interesting sort of Allagashes, all that type of stuff.
And then, Alex, tell us a few of the British breweries that are doing top quality cask ales that we may not be able to get in the States, that you can get only in England.
The best, Dark Star. That goes without saying. But Dark Star is available in the States, but not in New York. There's a company called Old Cask Imports, based in Alabama and Georgia. But unfortunately, they haven't got a distributor yet in New York. Burning Sky. I'd kill for Burning Sky here.
You know, Ben?
I had their Saison a couple of months ago, and I forget the name of it, but it was really.
And we were talking recently about like the rise of craft beer in the South. So you're saying that Alabama's getting Dark Lord cast from England and New York City.
And I tried it in Kentucky.
Did you?
Yes. I was in Georgia in December. Drinking Dark Star beer in Georgia, of all places. Who'd have thought it? But yes, absolutely. But I can't get it in New York yet. And that's a hint to distributors out there.
So, Dave, we're talking about August brewing traditions of Europe, right? So, for Gun Hill, what do you guys draw from when you're building your recipes and thinking about your range and your lineup of beers for people who might not be familiar with your products?
So what we do, what Chris does, is our big thing is making sure that our beers are very approachable for the most part. Even our stouts, which are Chris's forte, I would say anybody who's had them would say that even they are very, very approachable, even for the non-stout drinker. So that's sort of what we strive for when we're making our beers.
Okay. Just approachable, and it doesn't matter if it's American-leaning, British-leaning, German-leaning.
The only caveat being that we don't add anything extra to our beer. So Chris is willing to do whatever is necessary to make a good product out there.
Small hops and yeast, that's it.
Hey, Davey, so you're also working on a fundraiser. Why don't you tell us about that?
So we are in the process of trying to expand a little bit. We feel it's time that we sort of take the next step and start canning our beer. And so what we're doing right now is we're trying to bring in another 60-barrel fermenter so that we don't interrupt our current production, our draft production, to basically be designated for our canning. We're going to use the Ironheart canning, mobile canning company, to can three of our beers. We're going to can our Void of Light, our 2014 GABF Gold Medal winner, our two flagship beers, our Gun Hill Gold and our Gun Hill IPA. So we launched a Kickstarter type campaign.
So how do we find out about that?
So if you go, you can find out about it on our website. You can find out about it on our Facebook page or on our Twitter page, but if you go to crowdbrewed.com and search for Gunhill, you'll see the campaign there, and we've got.
And what's your website?
Our website is gunhillbrewing.com.
Okay, so that's something everyone should do. Check it out. I love this crowdfunding things, and a great way to support breweries. Going back to your brewer, Christian, Alex Hall, I want to get deep with you too, man, and you're coming back, because for many years you published the classic New York City like kind of beer newsletter called Gotham Imbiber.
Yes, I did.
So tell us about that and a little bit about the history of Chris Sheehan, who's the Gun Hill brewer.
All right. Well, the Gotham Imbiber, I started that as a fanzine. So I used to do one in the UK when I used to work for Dark Star in their brew pub. This camera weren't giving enough information for diehard beer geeks, like exactly where to find such beers that are new. So I started my own fanzine kind of thing. And that was the Independent Imbiber. And I immigrated to New York in 1999. Knocked that on the head and started the Gotham Imbiber, which was on the same lines. Basically a fanzine for beer geeks, just like where to go, where to find this stuff. Chris Sheehan, yes, I've known him for years. He was.
And wait, we're giving you huge credit, because the Gotham Imbiber was, for a long time, it was the way to find good beer in New York City, and you did a great job with that.
Thank you, appreciate it very much. I knocked that on the head and just made it into a website with the advent of technology and smartphones and stuff, rather than just have it as a printed paper in bars. I also got a gig with L Street News as well. So, okay, Chris Sheehan.
Wasn't he involved at a brewery in New Jersey for a little while, a short-lived brewery?
He was at
the two brew pubs. So I've known Chris for years. Like one of the first places I went when I moved here in 99 was Chelsea Brew Pub. And then he moved to short-lived brew pub in Newark, New Jersey. Then at J.J. Bissing's, I think, was it?
He did a lot of things, but going back, like, just say something. You know, Chris is a good brewer. He's brewed
himself.
Absolutely,
yes.
And
Many awards as well, many awards, yeah. Especially for stouts and porters.
But do you see him making you think if he made a cask condition ale, you'd feel good about it?
I've had his cask condition beer, yes, at Chelsea. Absolutely awesome, yes. He knows what to do. He's a professional, yeah, right. Absolutely.
And Jason, you got the
Shakespeare.
We should. So it's, yeah. Tell us, we should go to the Shakespeare tonight and the Jones Foundry, Jones Woods Foundry.
Yeah.
And then other UK, you know, Union Jacks hanging and all that stuff.
Jones would maybe, quite possibly. Yeah.
What are a couple other English inspired brew pubs or pubs that you'd recommend for beer? Like, I know the Ship Inn out in Milford, New Jersey. Have you been out there?
I've not been there. No,
you haven't.
No.
Have you been there, Alex?
I haven't, but I've had their beer.
And okay, I think they do. Anyone else can recommend an English inspired brew pub or anything in America? Maybe not. So you guys are really at the. It's funny, you're at the forefront.
I like that answer.
There's one on the West Coast whose name escapes me, but I haven't been there. But there is a serious English one. It's somewhere on the West Coast, but that's best I can do, I'm afraid.
So I guess we should spend a little more time trying some of these English inspired beers. Maybe we should go down to Kentucky, Georgia, and Alabama and try the Dark Lord. I don't know.
There's a brewery in Vermont that is English inspired in Burlington.
You got
Queen City.
Queen City. Yeah, they do some German stuff too, but definitely old world.
You've got a Wandering Star Massachusetts, which we're going to taste in a second.
Let's taste it right now. Come on. Yeah. And we'll talk about that.
What about...
Baltimore. There's Pratt Street. That's English. That's English. Pratt Street Brew Pub in Baltimore.
So you guys are... you got an uphill battle, but we're looking forward to it. So Castmark... Check it out. You can learn about places that are qualified to serve an English cask condition ale. Right now, there's only four in New York City. And Ben, anything else you want to wrap it up with?
I would encourage people. We started off the show talking about how even when did you say Cameron was founded? 1971.
Yes.
So all these decades later, cask beer is still sort of overlooked, I think, at a lot of parts of the United States. So I would just say, if you find yourself at a bar that has a cask beer on tap, ask some questions, give it a try, try to learn something about it. As we're trying to say here, there can be some really delicious results if you... go down that road.
And another shout out, you don't necessarily have to be an English style pub or brewery, but
absolutely not.
So you guys brought some casks from Keg and Lantern, which is in Brooklyn. It says a brew pub as well, right?
I brought a growler of their cask beer, yes, which is a cask lager, which is the first beer we tried on this show. Really good. So that just proves that it's not just ales, that can be cask conditioned successfully.
But so that can happen. There can be brew pubs that can also do cask conditioned ales, and we should look for them.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
We learned a lot of things on the show, and I don't know, man, but I still like my American craft beer. But I love some of their British beers too, and it's also really exciting that what's happening in England. Well, there's a lot of new breweries, and you know, I mean, are you bringing in anything like Beavertown or Thornbridge at your place?
Yeah, well, I bring in whatever I can, to be honest. I mean, it's so sporadic, what's available. I mean, the idea was that I went to see the breweries, and I asked them to try and help me bring in some of the obscure little breweries, like the Donningtons, and all these little Hook Nortons and all these tiny little breweries.
Yeah, Hook Norton.
But it just wasn't going to happen.
I'll say this. It makes me just want to travel the whole world, you know? And Ben, you're doing it, right?
When I can.
When you can.
Here and there.
And Davey, we should be able to... We should take a trip to Gun Hill.
The next trip should be to the Bronx.
Come up to Gun Hill. 7 days a week, we're open.
All right. Well, we got to close out. This has been a great show. We could go for 2 hours, but it's supposed to be 45 minutes. I love you guys. Love our listeners. Love the team here. Thank our sponsors at Union Beer Distributors who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thanks to Ben, Jason, Alex, and Dave for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Maggie Seiden, Justin Kennedy, our engineer, Jack Inslee. And before we close out, today's music break was provided by RecTech. Also, thank you, listener, for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes, and feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org. Next up, we have a teaser clip of Danny Bowen of Mission Chinese Food talking the intersection of food and family. Danny Bowen is cool, man. Guy's got balls. You know, open a Chinese restaurant, gets shut down, opens another one, you know. Eat Your Words, another great show on the Heritage Radio Network. All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo!
You know, we weren't the most well-off family growing up, so we always ate at home. We didn't go out to restaurants that often.
Acclaimed chef Danny Bowen of Mission Chinese has fond memories of food and family.
And my mom cooked, you know, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and yeah. I was just so fascinated. I'd always stand in the kitchen and cook with my mom, which is, it was amazing. You know, it was like really cool. It was a good time that we'd always spend that time together, and I think that's what really inspired me to want to cook, and it was cool because for that, you know, hour and a half that we ate, or hour that we ate every night, you know, the whole family was there, and my dad was there, and he worked, so I got to see him and talk to him. So it was cool. I always thought that, like, cooking and bringing people together, being able to hang out with your friends or your family is really important. I think that was one of the major reasons that I wanted to cook. I didn't know that once I started cooking, I would never see my family or friends, because I'd be cooking all the time, but, but you know, it's, you see them when they come to the restaurant.
You're fostering friendship and family for other people, right, I guess. Good times.
Yeah.
This was an excerpt of episode 100 of Eat Your Words, hosted by Kathy Irway. All episodes available on heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes. This piece was brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. Visit a farm. Escape through the net. EscapeMaker.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.